The message that I have to share today, I have pored over quite a few times, done a lot more review than I normally do because of its subject matter. I want to make sure that I'm not saying anything carelessly, though it may still ping people. And so I'm going to ask you to give me the benefit of the doubt and hear the heart of what I'm saying and don't get caught up on any one sentence that kind of sets you off, okay? We're going to talk about beauty. And it's that special time of year again in Canada, which we call the summertime. When we were living up in the Peace Country, which is known for being one of the coldest places in Alberta during the winter, there was a group of visiting missionaries. They'd taken a mission trip from Georgia or North Carolina, somewhere down there, and they'd come up to help with a building project up in northern Alberta. And one of the American volunteers asked one of the old northern farmers up there, So what do y'all do for fun during the summer in Canada? And the old farmer thought about it for a moment, and he said, well, if summer happens to fall on a weekend, we have a ball game, he said. Doesn't it feel like that sometimes? Like you got about one good weekend somewhere in there? Summer is a bit short here, there's no doubt about it. And so we get a few short months to enjoy the beauty of God's creation. Not as to say that there is no beauty in winter, but I doubt that anybody here is going to say that they'd prefer the winter over summer when it comes to the beauty of nature. There's just way more beauty to look at in the summer. And unfortunately, there is a dark side to that fact, because some of the beauty that shows up in the summer is actually dangerous. A danger to me, a danger to my integrity, a threat to my marriage, a threat to even the integrity of my family. Some of summer's beauty causes me to be emotionally unfaithful to my wife, even if only for a moment, because summer is when all the pretty women in town get to show off just how pretty they are. And there is just a lot more of them to see in the summertime. I am sharing, and I know I've shared before, that I personally struggle with the temptation to look at other women. And I don't believe I'm the only man in this room who would struggle with that. I've even read books called Every Man's Battle, which talks about this struggle. But because it's every man's battle, if you think about it, it becomes every woman's battle too. Even if she's a civilian casualty, it's her problem too. And so I want to talk about this both from the perspective of guys and girls. The good news is both men and women can be a part of the solution. So I'm going to speak two short sermons today. The first one to the boys and the men in the room, and the second one to the girls and the women. And usually I would be a ladies first kind of a guy, but I'm hoping that by speaking to the men first, the women in the room are going to give me a little benefit of the doubt before they get defensive here. Please believe me that this message is not coming from a legalistic heart of judgment, but rather the heart of a man that loves family, knows his own weakness, and has had plenty of opportunity to see what happens when beauty becomes a threat to family. And what I mean by that is I am in counseling with relationships that are falling apart, often related to the struggle of a man's eyes. That's not usually the only issue, but it's a big one. I want to fight for those marriages, and that's the heart in which I come to you with this sermon. Men, let's talk to you first. We spend most of our time trying to show other men around us how strong we are. Since we were boys, right? Flexing our muscles, throwing a baseball, swinging a hockey stick, whether it's showing how hard we work by what we own, whether it's literally flexing our muscles at the gym, or how fast we can run on a field, or having even intellectual debates. We want to show our intellectual prowess. We are quite obsessed with showing off just how strong we are. And yet, when it comes to standing up to physical temptation, we act like total wimps. And we tell other people, I just can't help but ogle those pretty women when they're so darn good looking. What red-blooded man can resist buying it when they're selling it? We even got all kinds of songs which seem to glorify the way a man turns into a pile of mush when he looks at a certain woman. And we almost pretend that it's virtue somehow, that the man is a better man because he becomes vulnerable and loses all his self-control when he sees a pretty girl. And men, this might sound manly in the country song, but it sure ain't godly. If we claim to be Christian, then we are claiming that the Spirit of God lives in us and gives us all the fruit of the Spirit. Study those in another sermon. But one of those fruits is self-control. You say that you can't help but look at that woman. Well, if you're a Christian, you absolutely can help it. You can resist that urge. If you are strong enough in your resolve to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning every day to go to work for that paycheck, and you're strong enough to go to the gym to work out, and you're strong enough for all the other things that make you a man of pride, a man of discipline, then I guarantee that you are also strong enough to resist that second look. Notice I said second look. The reason I say that is because an old pastor friend of mine once said, I don't have to ask forgiveness to take that first glance at a woman. I didn't know she was there. She just popped up. It's natural when you see motion in your sidelines to take a look. The first look is not a sin. But if your heart is not right, the second glance would be bad. In Job 31, verses 1 to 4, Job says this of himself. He says, I made a covenant with my eyes not to look lustfully at a young woman. For what is our lot from God above? What is our heritage from the Almighty on high? Is it not ruin for the wicked and disaster for those who do wrong? Does God not see my ways and count my every step? Job obviously takes this idea very seriously. He believes that if he allows his eyes to wander to other women, it is a threat to his, quote, what he calls the heritage from the Almighty. He describes that lustful look as wicked, and he says that it brings ruin and disaster. And Job reminds himself that God is always watching and counting every step. We might say that a little lustful glance is not a big deal, but do not forget that every extramarital affair that you've ever heard about, every pornography addiction, which terrorizes and demeans the wife of the man who struggles with it, started with one little lustful glance. Even if you think that I'm being dramatic and don't believe that every glance is bad, I want you to listen to what Jesus himself has to say on the topic, because his opinion matters a lot more than mine. Jesus says, you've heard that it was said, you shall not commit adultery. But I tell you that anyone who looks at a woman lustfully has already committed adultery with her in his heart. If your right eye causes you to stumble, gouge it out and throw it away. It is better for you to lose one part of your body than for your whole body to be thrown into hell. This is serious talk. Some guys might say that just taking the odd little peek at that cute little number on the street won't lead to an affair or some kind of adultery. And in a way, Jesus would agree with you, because he says that the adultery has already happened. The lustful look is not a gateway to adultery, according to Jesus. It is adultery. So apparently, he would rather have a church full of happy marriages with blind husbands than a trail of broken marriages wrecked by men who claimed that what they could see wouldn't hurt anyone. The battle against the second glance is one I have lost many times myself. But here's the hard truth. Every battle that I have lost since I was born again as a Christian is one I chose to lose. I chose to lose. God has promised in his word to supply me everything that I need, all the spiritual ammo to gun down any temptation before it grows into sin. Being tempted, by the way, is not a sin. Pretending to be too weak to resist temptation is a sin. That's an insult to God in you. Now let me say this, which I hope will be an encouragement. This is the lighter side of this. I'm being kind of hard, I know. Every temptation is not a sin, right? I said temptation is not a sin. But every temptation is a chance for a man to be a spiritual hero. What do I mean by that? Well, think about it. Heroes are not made in peacetime, are they? We actually can't have a spiritual victory without a spiritual struggle. You can't win the game unless you're playing it. And that means you have an opposing team. There is no victory without struggle, without competition, without conflict. So I say, expect a fight. The fact that you're struggling with this is not the crime. And when you lose the fight, and you do take that second look at a woman and objectify her or undress her in your mind, Satan is going to remind you of what a failure and a hypocrite you are. Happens to me all the time. Makes me wonder, maybe I should just quit. What kind of a person am I? But we need to remind ourselves that every time you do that thing, when you take the first look and you are so tempted to take that second look and you clench your eyes and you go and you say, Lord, I belong to you. I don't want to do this. You might even look like a fool in the moment that you're doing it, but you are literally fighting a battle inside yourself. You turn your head and you pray to God and you score a spiritual victory. You're putting points on the scoreboard for Jesus every time that you volunteer not to overindulge with your eyes. So if you're going to keep track of the times that you fail, you better keep track of the times that you also successfully resisted. Most people, I think, resist a lot more temptation than they actually give into. And we can kick our own butts all day long for the times we fail. But look at all the success. Look at all the victory we have in the Lord. And our Job passage said that God watches every step. Remember that? We often think that the only in the negative sense. God is watching you, so don't be bad. We imagine that our Heavenly Father is watching this game, if you like, and every time we fumble the ball, he shakes his head. But there's another side to God watching every step and every play. And that God, who loves you, along with a grandstand full of angels pulling for you, is watching every time you resisted and overcame and saying, yes, Satan, and that's our Jesus working in our man, taking you down again and again, proving you wrong. So let's make a covenant with God this summer to keep our eyes on the ball and off the cheerleaders. The championship is here on the field, not in the sidelines. Keep your eye on the ball. That's an encouragement to the guys. So now, women, I want to encourage you to see your side of this battle for purity, especially in the summer months. Try not to put this issue all on the guys. Truly, women are part of the problem. And the good news is that means they can be part of the solution. Some may say, why should women have to dress like prudes and be covered up to their eyeballs just so men don't lust after them? Well, for one, you don't. I really don't think you have to. We are past the days where women are required to wear girdles and sweltering layers of clothing in the blazing sun and never go swimming while men can wear whatever they want and do whatever they want. We're past those days. I don't think any of us have to feel quite that confined. This was a double standard in its day, and I'm glad it's gone. Women should not have to be perpetually uncomfortable just to compensate for a man's lack of self-control. So let's be clear there. But I really do believe that there is a way of dressing that lets a gal get some vitamin D and stay cool without becoming a magnet for men's lustful stares. I really think most of the ladies in this room will agree that there is a happy medium. Would you say? Is there a way that you can dress comfortably and not promiscuously? I think there is. And I believe that most of the ladies in this room are already in that zone. I don't have to be talking to you, to all of you anyway. So if what I have to say today to women does not apply to you directly, can I encourage you to think about mentoring another woman in your life who may not even realize how big the struggle is? You can tell them, your pastor, the holy, high, and mighty pastor, says he struggles with this every day. If that will help them help other men fight and win this battle, it would be worth the embarrassment. So you have my permission. Women, think about giving counsel to other ladies and help them understand how much families may suffer when both men and women fail to stay pure. My wife made me promise not to prescribe any specific dress codes in this sermon. And to be honest, I had no intention of doing so because there isn't one in the Bible. I know the Bible fairly well, and I can't find a dress code for Christians in there, for men or women. So the Bible offers no rules on how low shorts have to go and how high necklines need to be. But I have a feeling that most of you would, if you thought about it, find this happy medium without some church-sanctioned imposed rule about it. I'm just going to appeal to your hearts, and I feel that if you'll hear my heart on this, you will know what to do. God will show you that. I've carried so much shame for my struggle with lust. It is a regular struggle, and it gets worse in the summer. Sometimes I've wondered why God wired me to naturally want to look at women all the time, all women, when his desire was for me to only have eyes for one. I used to think it was unfair, because it doesn't seem like women have a struggle like that. But perhaps they do. And I have such a gracious wife who has been such a humble student of her husband and who has tried so hard to understand me, and I have sought to be a student of her and understand her too. And since she knows I struggle with this, we have a lot of conversations about it. And in the last few years, we have discovered that there actually is a struggle that she has, which is different than mine, but peculiarly connected. And I have her permission to share it. This isn't a smear or anything like that. This is the struggle she has found. And that is the desire to be seen as beautiful. Amy is one of the most self-disciplined, modest, and virtuous women that I know. And yet she has discovered of herself that even to, for example, give up her makeup case for Lent. She's tried that a few times and done all right with it. But she says it is amazing how much of a mental game it is for her to be okay with herself when she leaves the house without makeup on. I have a feeling that Amy is no more alone in that struggle than I am in mine. And the reason I think that is because of simple observation. I observe that nearly every woman I know wears makeup almost every day. And even if they aren't wearing makeup, they may be tempted to buy expensive clothes or jewelry or gear or purses or shoes, which make a woman look trendy and relevant and at least as good looking as the woman next to her. And I see very little variance between Christian and non-Christian women on that matter. Exactly how they dress may be a little different, but there's still the intention of keeping up, so to speak. Yet look at the clear encouragements of Scripture to women that says again and again that beauty in the sight of God has nothing to do with any of that. I want to share three passages from three different parts of the Bible, three different writers that all say almost the exact same thing. Proverbs 31, verses 30 and 31 says, "Charm is deceptive, beauty is fleeting, but a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. Honor her for all that her hands have done, and let her works bring her praise at the gate." 1 Timothy 2, 8 and 10 says, "Therefore I want the men everywhere to pray, lifting up holy hands without anger or disputing. I also want the women to dress modestly, with decency and propriety, adorning themselves not with elaborate hairstyles or gold or pearls or expensive clothes, but with good deeds, appropriate for women who profess to worship God." And then this last one is probably my favorite. I put it on the front of the bulletin. 1 Peter 3, 3 and 4 says, "Your beauty should not come from outward adornment, such as elaborate hairstyles and the wearing of gold jewelry or fine clothes. Rather, it should be that of your inner self, the unfading beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is of great worth in God's sight." From three different passages comes that same message, that God's beauty cannot be outdone, and it can't be lost by age or injury. Girls, you want the secret to overcome aging? You want to be beautiful forever? There is a solution. True beauty is not just a mask or a veneer. It radiates from the heart. No makeup artist can compete with the way that a godly woman's soul can make her magnetic. magnetic to every red-blooded man and woman. I've heard a woman say that I don't dress to attract other men beside my husband. And she was giving me pushback here, and fair enough. She said, to be honest, the pressure comes from other women. I'm dressing to keep up with them. Regardless of who you're dressing up for, the message remains the same, that true beauty shines from the inside out. With such people, you just want to get close to them. You want to get close to that love and that joy and that peace and that patience and all that other spiritual stuff that just seems to emanate out of that beautiful woman. If we really agree on that, if we really believe the Bible, I wonder why almost every Christian woman I know spends hours of time each week and hundreds of dollars each year on her outward appearance. Why is it so hard to believe that the fear and knowledge of God makes you beautiful both to God and to people? Now, ladies, let me be clear. I am not saying this to guilt anyone for wearing makeup. It's not a sin to dress up. It's not a sin to wear makeup. It's not a sin to wear a nice dress. However, just as Jesus said that to look at a woman lustfully is a sin of the heart, I believe that women who obsess about their outward appearance are also guilty of a heart sin. It's actually not a sin for me to look at a woman. Where it becomes a sin is when it's a lustful stare, when I begin to manipulate in my own mind for my own self-gratification. I have an appetite I'm trying to feed by looking. That's where it becomes a heart sin. It's driven by a doubt that what God has given you or me is good enough. So a woman telling a man to just have some self-control and stop looking, and I have heard women say that. They say, what's the men's big problem? Why are they all pigs? I would say to that woman, would you do me a favor? Just don't wear makeup or buy clothes for a year. And she would say, well, that's silly. Why would I not do that? You know, I can do that. There's nothing wrong with that. I say, well, yeah, nothing wrong with it. I agree. But there's nothing inherently right about it either. Just let it go. It's not a big deal. I bet you she'd struggle. And perhaps that struggle is the closest parallel Amy and I have found to the struggle that men have not to look lustfully at women. Some women are able to do this, just as some men are able to never take the second glance. But the sweeping majority of both men and women, I believe, really do have a struggle here. Now think about this. Does anybody else think that it's a coincidence that every man's battle is not to make women into visual objects, while every woman's battle is not to make herself a visual object? Does that seem like a coincidence to anybody? I kind of don't think so. It's two sides of the same coin, really, and I don't think that's a coincidence. Perhaps God has designed it in that way so that we'll be gracious with one another. Here's my main point. Men, Jesus has made his summertime beautiful enough that we don't have to steal glances of what I'm going to call counterfeit beauty, the beauty that's fleeting. And women, Jesus has made you beautiful enough from the inside out that you don't need to get noticed from the outside in. The key to victory here is to see Jesus as both the creator and owner of all beauty. Jesus has the patent on it. He is the author of life. The most beautiful woman that was ever made was made in the mind of God first. The majestic mountains, everything that you could define as beautiful is copyright Jesus Christ. He has the patent on it all. So let's not settle for any more black market, cheap knockoff kind of beauty, which ultimately destroys both men and women and their families and children too. Let's work together as men and women of God this summer. This isn't a legalistic thing. This is not a demand saying that this is, you have to wear this or not wear that. This is a plea from the heart requesting that you help guys like me, women, and that men stop being so-called wimps. Stop making excuses and respect the women for the beautiful people they were made inside out.